are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
As we light our chalice today, let us remember that we're part of a great community of faith. May this dancing flame inspire us to fill our lives with the Unitarian ideals of love, justice, and truth. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship, and especially warm welcome to those worshipping with us for the first time today and those that we haven't seen for a while. Your presence enriches us. My name's Jenny Dyster. I'm the current president of the Committee of Management of this church and a member of this congregation. Our church has been going on in South Australia since 1854. It's a spiritual community that has principles rather than a creed and is one that supports you in seeking and following your own spiritual path, any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work to a better world. And we are, of course, worshipping today on Kaurna land. In her memoir, Gwen Raverat, who was the daughter of, niece of Charles Darwin, recalled going home from a concert and chattering and being told to shut up very firmly by a cousin. Why? He wanted to think about the music, and it had never occurred to her that anyone would want to think about the music. Well, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes now to think about the music. I'll end it with the gong, and if you don't want to think about the music, it's just meditation time. I'm going to ask Erin to come and do the reading today. It's from a novel that I borrowed from my Uncle Jack and never returned. It's Russell Braddon's biography of Nancy Wake, who was the White Mouse the Gestapo sought. She'd married a very rich Marseille steel industrialist in 1939, not a propitious time for a marriage, is it? And worked in the resistance and then eventually had to escape because of fear of capture, and then trained in Britain to be parachuted back to continue. And she's the most decorated Australian woman from World War II and never decorated by the Australian government. Decorated by the US government, the French government, and the UK.
The final ordeal at the madhouse was an interview with a psychiatrist. Understanding nothing of psychiatry, Nancy decided in advance that she would not enjoy this interview. Impatiently, she sat in his waiting room until the girl ahead should be finished. The door opened and the girl came out. As the door closed behind her, she ran quickly across to Nancy and whispered, "Plots. They show you hundreds of plots and ask you what they look like." "Well, what do they look like?" Nancy whispered back. "Plots. But you don't say that. You say corsets and butterflies and head waiters and things like that." "Why?" "I don't know, but you do." The doorknob rattled and the girl fled. A little puzzled, Nancy entered the psychiatrist's office. He asked her a long series of questions, none of which she considered had anything to do with subversive work in France as she understood it. She therefore amused herself by lying. "Are your mother and father happy together?" Nancy, recollecting how her mother had been alone in life for 20 years, replied, "Very." "Was your home life a happy one?" Nancy, remembering her 2 attempts at running away, replied, "Perfectly." "Have you ever indulged in fantasies, you know, wished that your mother was dead, or tried to draw attention to yourself by lying or anything like that?" Nancy, who had at the age of 5 stuffed a small cushion down her front and announced that she was going to have a baby, because the lady next door received so many kind attention, responded gravely, "Never." The questions continued and the colorful answers came back readily. Then she was shown the series of pictures made by blots of ink being folded in a sheet of paper so that they squelched symmetrically out on either side of the fold and produced curiously insect-like results. There were about 100 of them, nightmarish, spidery of various colors. As each one was shown to her, the psychiatrist asked her to name the immediate object with which her mind associated it. "Blot," said Nancy, "blot, blot, 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 blot." Every single picture to her looked, she claimed, only like a blot. Expressionlessly, the psychiatrist put the papers away. "Surely you can see something," he suggested. "Certainly," she agreed. "Someone's thrown a bottle of ink or something." He told her that he would speak a word and she must respond with another word which her mind associated with the one he uttered. The duel was short. "Roses, red. Sugar, sweet. Soda, whiskey." Quietly he put away his list of words, wrote in his dossier, and then suggested that Nancy might play with some blocks. He was a large young man, and now Nancy looked at him curiously. "You're not English, are you?" she asked. "No, New Zealander." "Don't you think you'd be more use fighting the Japanese in the Pacific than mucking about with all these ridiculous blots and blocks over here?" she demanded severely. "Because if you don't, I do." Knowing the value of the job he did, he just smiled amiably and replied, "Perhaps. Well, that'll be all for now. Thank you." And so dismissed her. Cassette interviewees told him just as much by the quality of their cussedness as did the compliant or over-anxious by their desire to please. He was perfectly satisfied that Ensign Nancy Wake would make good training material, and he said so in his report.
The title today is Be Impeccable with Your Word. In his book, The Four Agreements, Miguel Ruiz describes the first agreement, Be Impeccable with Your Word, as the most important. Well, I would describe it as being the one needing to be taken with the largest grain of salt. Lying is the most common of our misdeeds. It's an unavoidable part of human nature, so it is worth thinking about. It's addressed in the Ten Commandments of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam in one context only. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Well, fair enough. Lying about someone in order to get them executed or imprisoned by a court of law is totally despicable. But we can all think of situations in which the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth would be a very poor strategy indeed. Like the liar bird, most of us go out of our way to present ourselves as skilled, talented, and gorgeous while courting. We admire the likes of the woman dubbed the White Mouse by the Nazis. Nancy Wake lied to save the lives of grounded airmen, build escape routes out of Vichy France to arm the resistance and sabotage German communications. Her ability to lie through her teeth was crucial. While teaching in an eastern suburbs school, I was told the story of a little guy in my class whose father was in jail for attempted murder. The previous year to this, he had rocked up at school while on bail, demanding to see his son in defiance of a restraint order. The receptionist immediately lied about the whereabouts of the child. The principal put in place a lockdown, the teacher hid in a locked storeroom with the boy, and a teacher aide pretended to be the teacher. Liars all, except the principal. Amazing how they keep their hands clean, never mind. Lying is a crucial part also of our development as kids. between the ages of 2 and 4 is when we explore the idea that what we know and experience is not the same as what others know and experience. Because toddlers' language skills are just developing, they don't have a clear idea of where the truth begins and ends. They also have a fairly shaky grasp on the difference between reality, daydreams, wishes, fantasies, and fears. Plus, they have very strong emotions and will defend to the death the notion that they did not eat the chocky bicky, despite the evidence all over face and fingers. Mild diplomatic responses injecting a bit of doubt are the way to begin to instill a notion that you're not sucked in. Ooh, it must be mud then. But the time comes for redirection, because between the ages of 5 and 8, children will tell more lies to test what they can get away with, especially lies relating to school, homework, and friends. It's also the time when they'll catch you out on the small reflexive lies you tell, like, "Tell her we won't be home, love." You may also need to explain the necessity of the occasional white lie. "I know you don't love your new jumper and it does make your neck itchy, but Grandma put hours into knitting it. That's really special, and that's something you can honestly thank her for." Children and adults lie for similar reasons: to get out of trouble, for personal gain, to impress or protect someone, or to be polite. However, children need to be explicitly taught the downsides of lying. Fiction, like our story today, thanks Christine, Lyrebird, is ideal for the task. Pinocchio is iconic, isn't he? We need also to explain to children the benefits of honesty in terms of trust. Now, this can backfire. It's not the easiest of tasks. My mother, who was a teacher, recalls a small boy kissing his mother affectionately before boarding up the bus for a school excursion. Some of his classmates started to call him Mummy's boy, but he was totally unfazed. "If you're nice to your mother," he announced, "she'll believe everything you tell her." Food for thought. 6 years of age he was. I wonder what he's up to now. By the ages of 9 to 12, many children are well on their way to establishing a hard-working, that's homework doing, trustworthy and conscientious identity. But they're also becoming more adept at maintaining lies and more sensitive to the repercussions of their actions, and they may have strong feelings of guilt after lying. Forthright and longer conversations about honesty are definitely necessary. Now, before I delve into what it means to be impeccable with your word as an adult, I thought it might be rather fun to exchange some memories. Can you remember any transparent whoppers you told as a child? Or do you have a victory story, a lie that you got away with? Can you remember when you caught your parents out on a fib the first time? And when you lied, were your parents heavy-handed, determined to catch you out and mend the error of your ways, or did they avoid backing you into a corner? Let's just have a few minutes buzz time, and I'll pop those questions up on the screen. So, turn around, have a chat, and fess up. God, you must have been a dishonest lot. Be impeccable with your word for adults. Impeccable means acting with the highest standard. In other words, being your best self. When you judge or blame yourself or others for anything, you're doing exactly the opposite. On the other hand, when you're impeccable, you take responsibility for your words without criticizing, blaming or gossiping. You also honour your commitments, so you only make commitments that you intend to follow through on. Now, this is setting the bar pretty high. We learn very early to agree to do things in order to keep people off our backs. It's when the tables are turned and we are the recipients of messages like, the matter is in hand, we'll get back to you, that we see the value of people who keep their word. Sounds very simple, but it's easier said than done. Yet if maintained, integrity is very powerful and transformative. Think of the times that you were angry and let fly with words that resulted in profound consequences. Keeping your mouth shut or saying the right thing could have taken your anger to a much better place. Words are powerful. Anger can be made worse by the words you use, but words can also defuse situations, defuse negativity. When we communicate without criticizing, analyzing, blaming, or diagnosing others, describing our observations, sharing our feelings, clearly and respectfully asking for what we need, we are much more likely to inspire compassion and cooperation. Lying gets a very bad rap generally because it's an essential constituent of fraud, gaslighting, abusive relationships, and many other miserable bad behaviours. But even lies told with good intentions can be extremely hurtful if the cat is let out of the bag, so as to speak. So being impeccable with your word is a worthwhile aim because of its potential to reduce harm and suffering to yourself and to everyone else in your life. A few nights ago, I saw the replay of Arne Doe's interview and portrait session with Sydney chef Kylie Kwong. She recalled the time in her life when she needed to stop lying by omission. Her lies were lies of omission. She just left facts out about her gender preference. Her dad was suspicious and she wasn't prepared to lie overtly when he asked her directly who she was going out with. So she came out with it. It was a Wednesday night. I'm gay, Dad, that's what I am. Her father thanked her for her honesty and then said, but I don't understand it and I don't agree with it. From this moment, I disown you as my daughter. And if you call home, you can speak to your mum and your brothers, but I'm not going to speak to you. Well, no dinner for anyone that night, and a pretty dreadful quiet atmosphere settled like a pall over the normally noisy household. Her mother was dreadfully upset, but told her, you're free now, you can be who you need to be. But then, miraculously, there was a turnaround on Friday night. Kylie was awoken by heavy steps in the passage and her father burst into her room sobbing and saying he couldn't do it, he loved her, he wanted her to stay. In the two silent nights, he managed to drop 52 years of ego and transform himself. She and her father have a wonderful relationship with each other and she's accepted that she's actually very much like him. Big, bossy and noisy. Her big message is be yourself, no matter how hard or scary it is. Be yourself. There's no other way. You may have read this book, Danger Music, in which Ed Ayers had to explain to her aging mum that she really felt like a man and was undergoing transition. And she absolutely dreaded that. And her mother's response was, oh, why didn't you tell me earlier? You must have been suffering for so long. So it's all hard stuff. I'm sure many of you here have had a time when you've had to stand up and be counted, when family have taken exception to your choice of a life partner or your decision about education, a job, or friends or activities, where you would like to head next. But I'd prefer to go into less intense territory. I'd like to talk about how we can work on ourselves to reduce the glib fibs, reduce the dishonesty, denial, and defensive passive-aggressive behaviours that make life miserable, embarrassing, or painful. First of all, we take the time to listen. Try to not be eager to spill out your own thoughts before others have finished. Really tune in, which means mobile phone off, PC off or sleep, and pay attention to people when they're speaking. Secondly, a strategy I learned from the Quakers when I attended their discussion evenings on Thursday nights a few years back. Take at least 5 to 10 seconds to truly pause and think about what the other person said before responding. Now, this might be difficult as our culture tends to expect instant responses. Taking too long elicits strange faces, irritation, or people repeating what they just said to you. But if you keep doing it, eventually people will appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to be thoughtful. Now, I must admit I'm fairly bad at this, as my family practices the opposite strategy in conversation. We practice the art of overlapping conversations, and I am a backslider. But occasionally I manage to pull it off. Thirdly, use words to show people that you've listened. That's interesting. I'm intrigued. Can you tell me more? Or, that's awful. What a challenge. These phrases do not launch into a competitive story about yourself. And the other thing is, this strategy is especially useful when dealing with difficult, irrational, or rude people. Choose your words slowly and carefully. Even that few extra seconds can save you from saying something you didn't really mean, or something that doesn't make sense, or maybe just something that comes across as inappropriate. Really pause and think to choose the right words. You may need to say, oh, just a moment, I've got to think about that. And if you do that, you'll probably start to say less. The fifth one comes from an article about not swearing. I read it in the waiting room, waiting for my flu shot, and I confess I've not put it into practice. Only use words you're comfortable with. You may wish to research words you like using more in conversation and words you believe in. Come up with alternatives to swearing. Lastly, more importantly, think of your words as a contract. If you were held accountable for the words you use, how would you speak differently? If you tell someone, I'll be there, and don't mean it, what are the repercussions? People will trust you less, invite you less, they'll think you're flaky. Repercussions are always an essential consideration. By asking yourself, am I being part of the problem or part of the solution, we minimize harm and maximize goodwill. We are, after all, here to make the world a better place. And here endeth the lesson. Remain seated for the benediction. Go in peace, speak the truth. Go in peace, speak the truth. Give thanks each day. Respect the earth and her creatures, for they are alive like you. Care for your body, it's a wonderful gift. Live simply, be of service. Be guided by your faith and not your fear. Go lightly on your path. Walk in a sacred manner. And our last bit of Schubert is a vocal today.
The ring on my finger, the ring on my finger, beautiful Schumann song from the cycle of a woman's life and love. She sings to that sacred ring upon her finger.
Thank you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.